This is a replay of the Wednesday night, July 2nd, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and if it's your mind and absolutely of no consequence, we want to talk about it. Well, it can have consequence to you, just not anything on the political spectrum. And that's what we'll do. I'll play your requests as well, and a few more Whispers records. We'll be doing that tonight and tomorrow night, of course, because sadly, Walter Scott is no longer with us of the Whispers, and one of the Scott twins, and it is sad indeed. All right, but I had to start off with news of the weird. I don't know about you, but I dread getting the mail. Invariably, there's something in it that's a surprise that I don't want to see. Usually, it's not a big consequence, but it's something, right? And usually something that I have to fix. Like the state of Arizona had claimed that I owed him $100 for a tax return that I didn't file, except I filed it. Well, the good news on that is, of course, I proved that I filed it and they waived the fee. Okay, fine, except that it took an hour of my life for no damn good reason. Well, hey, Corey Martin went and got the mail, and it was much worse than that. He's a middle-aged guy in Beverly Hills, and Beverly Hills, Texas, that is. And he goes, gets the mail, gets a package from his ex-girlfriend. Never good, right? Inside was a copy of a marriage certificate indicating that he was married to her. He told police that while he had been in a relationship with a woman, Kristen Spearman of Waco, even obtained a marriage license with her. They broke up before the wedding. Well, that didn't stop Spearman. After investigating, the police determined that Spearman had convinced a pastor to certify the marriage license without the groom present and then file the certificate to the county court's clerk. So, the deal is, in Texas, there is only one scenario that allows for an absentee spouse, and that's active military overseas unable to make it. But even then, you had to have a proxy stand in. So in this case, the groom should have been there, or if he was legitimately overseas, he wasn't even in Dallas, then he should have been there. So the police took matters into their own hands and arrested her for third-degree felony stalking and took her to jail. Now, I was actually kind of pleased about that because lately there's been a spate of situations where people are wronged and police say nothing we can do about it. John has a friend who actually owns a comic book store, of all things, and a guy ripped him off for $2,000, used a credit card. The credit card went through, the company verified it, and then suddenly he gets a notice from the credit card that no, the charges have been reversed. They're no good. So he tries to find the guy. He can't. Turns out that the guy has done this to a handful of other merchants. He calls the police because this was a $2,000 comic. So, you know, that should be some type of larceny here, don't you think? The cop said there's nothing we can do about it. Yeah, somehow that's a civil dispute. And I found that utterly amazing and suggested he go to small claims court, which he might. But I thought when you have proof, and by the way, he had camera proof as well. He has guys on camera at the cash register, giving him the credit card and all that. The other thing that I find odd is if you're a merchant and you take a credit card because the credit card company has cleared it saying, oh, it's good. How do they get to change their mind? Yeah, I can understand where they might want to ding the cardholder, the customer. That's between the credit card company and the customer. But the third-party vendor who took the card based on assurance from the credit card company, it was good, makes absolutely no sense to me. All right, but let's put all that aside for the moment since we're not going to solve the world's problems and just be grateful that Beverly Hills, Texas police arrested the miscreant bride in this case. Yeah, we've got others, but right now Jim is in Richmond and it's Wednesday. Now, when it's Wednesday and Jim's in Richmond, we usually have an eye doctor update. So, Jim, what's going on?
I just wanted to say that I hadn't called because things have been going around, going along here. Uh-huh. Number one, my sister now is back, last I heard, in the emergency room.
Oh.
Because she left. She was at the rehab place, and she was doing very well.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know how to explain it, but let's just say she was bleeding from front and back.
Okay.
And it, you know, not through the urine.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
Then the rehab said place sent her to the emergency room.
Yeah, right, right.
And now she's back in the hospital.
Oh.
And, so now they're going to run tests and everything, but it's not her stent that's bleeding.
No,
so
right.
They don't know what it is. And she was scheduled to go, you know, I don't know if they go through your nose or your stomach to be scoped, and then the doctors didn't show up.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Then this happened. So and this happened. Well, the appointment wasn't kept. Let's put it that way. And then today. Like I said, she went to the emergency room, and that's the last I heard. My elder sister called me to let me know, so I don't know what the latest on her is.
Hopefully, they'll get to the bottom of this one way or another, and that's a good thing. But the silver lining, if there is one in what you're telling me, is I know there was a question about how many days your sister could be in rehab based on her current insurance.
Right.
And the reality is if she's admitted back to the hospital, when she's out of that, the clock starts ticking again. So
that would be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she was doing well in rehab, and then this happened.
Yeah, usually.
And there's
in almost all cases, this will reset it, so that's good. Now,
right.
What about you?
Right. Okay, now, Monday, Wednesday, I told you that's when they found out that they had to redo the surgery.
Yes.
And so then I haven't heard anything. So Monday I called the doctor's office and then I said, you know, has he made a decision? Is he going to do surgery or what? And I talked to the scheduler and she said, I'll go ask the doctor. Well, I called at 10 o'clock in the morning. I heard at 4:30 in the afternoon. He said, yes, he's going to do surgery, but he's going to wait a while. And I said, wait a while. And he says, yeah, how do you want to go to St. Joseph's Hospital or the place back on Toohey Avenue? And I said, Toohey Avenue, I don't want to go to a hospital. So she said, okay, we're going to schedule it for August 12th.
What? Well, wait a minute. No, let's back up. For people who haven't heard your saga, you had something inserted in your eye, which was working its way out of your eye.
Right. And that tube, by the way, was inserted in 2017 by a different doctor.
All right, but now
and
it's
that's
been
the one that
now it's been working its way out of your eye, and you're in pain.
Well, and I'm very discomfort, but not in pain.
Oh.
And I've been mad at myself because I've been rubbing my eye tremendously,
especially today. Yeah.
And so anyways, so they said, we want you to have it done August 12th, come back to his office on August 13th, and then turn around and come back on August 20th. So I had to, you know, tell my brother all this and beg him if he can still take me.
Right.
And the whole thing is why didn't they have me come back a week later the first time they did surgery? They made, made me wait a month and a half, and that's when they found out.
Right,
you know?
I'm so sorry. Frustrating. So sorry.
Right. And so the ointment that I'm supposed to put in my eye three times a day, I called in the prescription.
Uh-oh.
And they said, you know, I mean, I got the prescription, but the tube is so small and you have to do it three times a day. And I sometimes miss, you know, my eyelid becomes goopy.
I understand.
So anyways, I called the pharmacy today and I says, when can I refill this? Because it's not going to last very long. Oh, it's only good for 30 days and the prescription. And I go, that's ridiculous because three times a day, don't they figure it out? The tube is only 2 inches long. So she goes, well, let me see what I can do. And then she went on. And by the way, after the insurance, it was
$15. Okay, so that, then that's said, by the way, that's basically nothing. I was holding my breath afraid that it was going to be over 100.
No, but here's the funny part. She said, let me go see. And I guess she called, like, GoodRx and Single Care and everything.
Right, all those,
and she said, okay, we can get it for you for $13.
Okay.
And I go, wait a minute. I said to her, wait a minute. How much is the insurance company paying, and I have to pay $15? She goes, well, I don't know that.
Right.
And then I go, well, if I have to wait till August 12th, I'm going to need three tubes.
Huh?
So then she goes, no problem. And she punched in the computer, I can get you three tubes for $25.
All right.
That's $8 a piece.
Yeah.
And I go, I'm in my mind, you know, am I being ripped off by the insurance company charging me $15?
No, you know? It's just the bureaucracy of the world, unfortunately. It's not intentional, but that's always the way. And for anybody, if you go and pick up a prescription and your insurance basically says it's X number of dollars and you think that's outrageous, always ask them to check GoodRx and Single Care because you may find out that it is exponentially cheaper than the insurance you've got.
Right. And then on top of that, I have a scheduled appointment for my first visit with the new primary doctor on July 17th.
All right.
Because she's been on maternity leave.
Right, yeah.
Right. So then I called them up and I said, I have to go get my surgery on August 12th. Can I use that visit to get the... Because they told me I had to go all through the blood tests, the EKG and everything. And she goes, oh, no, this is your first appointment. In other words, they're going to do an extensive check of me, but everything's in my records at the same place.
Yeah, of course.
So she goes, no, we're going to have to, schedule. So they scheduled it for July 29th.
Okay.
To do the blood tests and everything. I'm going, you have that all in my, they call it my chart.
Right, of course.
You have it all in my chart. Oh, but the rules are 30 days out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And then I just got totally frustrated with all that.
Sure you
and
did.
And then I had to call because my friend, she's spending the whole time up north, the whole month of July.
Right.
So I had to call. So I called and I got rides to... them through the transportation company.
Good.
So I got that covered.
Good.
So then I have my diabetic appointment on the 21st, and that's in Janesville.
Uh-huh.
So I had to call my brother for that, and he said okay, but he has to take me to get my regular retina appointment on the 23rd.
Right. Well,
so I'm begging all these people, for rides and stuff.
Well, so I'll tell you what. I give you a lot of credit for remembering any of this.
Right. Well, I wrote it down on paper, and now I stick them on the front of my new freezer.
All right.
Because I can't see them.
Right, I understand.
So today I was out of food, so I asked my friend's daughter who lives across the lake, and she took me shopping.
All right, good.
And I got shocked at everything. I could not hardly see anything in the store.
Yeah, I
know. So my eyesight is totally worse than what it was.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know where everything is in the Walmart. I know what aisle, but I don't know, you know, I couldn't pick out my own food, but I know what. But we were going through the store because she had to get something for herself on the far end of the store. It got to the point where I didn't know where I was.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out because, like I said, I can walk the store and I know where everything is because, you know, but I couldn't tell you what shelf it was on or anything, but
well, you
I
made
just
it.
Freaked out today.
You made it and you got food, so let's consider that a win. All right.
Right.
Well, there's an interesting report. Keep me posted, and we'll pray for your sister.
But I wanted to ask you another question, and it's not related to health. Have you seen or heard about this app that they have where everybody plays this game called Royal something, and they have commercials for it, and they have Hollywood stars?
I think you're talking about Royal Match.
Royal Kingdom.
Oh, Royal Kingdom. Okay, Royal Kingdom.
Right.
Yeah, it's puzzle adventures in Royal Kingdom. These are not anything I would be remotely interested in, but yes, I am aware of it.
Right. But, okay, so now they have all these commercials. They're paying for all these people to do the commercials, Hollywood people and everything.
Sure.
And then my question is, there's no charge to play it. There's no ads. And are they stealing your information?
No. It's mostly through purchases you make while you're on the app. And when I said Royal Match, before there was Royal Kingdom, there was Royal Match. It's the same thing.
Right.
What you do, you buy coins to get extra moves or bypass other levels or things like that. And that contributes to the game's revenue. It doesn't rely on advertising, but you are buying the coins, you know, when you want to. It's like John plays pool online and he's always buying more coins. So I'll see charges on the credit card for, you know, like $4.37. I'll know exactly what it is, you know, that kind of thing. So what it is it's intentionally designed to cause the player to buy and use these coins. So it's a monetization.
It's like Minecraft.
If you say so. I don't know.
The kids show Minecraft.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
I didn't understand because they
keep telling you it's totally free.
It's totally free,
yes, except you have to buy the coins.
So that's what I didn't understand because here I'm thinking, you know, you're playing this game. Are they stealing your information?
No, it's not that. It's not that. But it may cost you 50 coins to win the game.
Wow.
So that's primarily how it's doing it. But no, you're not going to see anything that is that well advertised and underwritten that's in business to steal your information.
Right.
You'll see that in other ways, like the person who wants to share his wealth with you from Nairobi. But no, Royal Match and Royal Kingdom, they are free. Yeah, until you start to play it, you'll find out if you're really getting addicted to this. This ain't free.
Right, and then I have one last thing. I hope you don't mind me keeping you on the phone. I've been getting texts. I mean, I'm not text. Texts.
Okay.
From Hilton, and all of a sudden they go, "Is so-and-so there?"
Just delete them.
I know, but I'm saying I get this is a phone call.
Okay, don't answer.
Right.
Never answer the phone if you don't recognize the number. Let it go to voicemail.
Right. Right, but I just didn't know if you heard of anything. Well, there's Hilton is calling people.
No, it's not Hilton. It's a scam, undoubtedly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, Hilton's not calling you to entice you to take a marvelous vacation. No.
Right, but this is from different cities.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure. Well,
for...
when you say it's from different cities, I mean, anybody can spoof a caller ID. They can be from anywhere in the world, and they could be right next door. So, yeah, don't answer the phone if you don't recognize the number, and never return voicemail or texts on people you don't know. That's the way to stay safe.
Right. I delete them and report them.
Now you know. That's good. Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Okay.
All right. So 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. I think we're going to play some Whispers next. But your request as well coming up tonight on WGN Radio. Oh, yes, and here I am talking to Jim, and I've forgotten my responsibilities, and I do have them. That's right. And I love this, actually, because I'm talking about the Sea Crane Company, which is one of my favorite things. Yeah, there aren't that many merchants where I can say I just love them, and that's so true with Bob Crane and the Sea Crane Company. And, you know, I always say the one thing all their radios have in common is the world's best reception, and then I tell you to buy a Wi-Fi radio, and I tell you that has the best reception, and it's like, what? No, not like AM and FM, but if you have a wireless router or a wireless access point, you know what it's like when maybe you've got a device and you're three or four rooms away and it's just not connecting well. Well, you won't have that trouble with the CC Wi-Fi 3 because it is as robust online as your radio is terrestrially. It's great. But the big feature on the CC Wi-Fi 3 is its intuitiveness. It is easy to use. Yeah, just plug it in and use it. I put one by John's desk while he's streaming calls and screening calls, and he doesn't need to ask questions, which is absolutely amazing. Now, of course, what you get is you get, oh man, about 30,000 streams, probably more, all radio stations from all over the world, including Chicago, but everywhere else as well. You don't sign up for an app. There's no microphone. There's no money involved, no ads on the screen, no anything. And it sounds great. The audio is better than any smartphone you're going to encounter. And it's just superior in so many ways. So if you like Wi-Fi radio, I think you're going to like the CC Wi-Fi 3. And you can go to ccradio.com anytime and take a look at it. ccradio.com. I think you'll fall in love with it. Now, if you can't go online and you want to buy one as a gift for somebody who is online, call them. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. Or call them if you have any questions. They'll answer it. They'll send you a catalog in the mail if you want it. And you can even order by phone. But if you can go online, yeah, find out more about the CC Wi-Fi 3 Internet Radio. I think you're going to love it. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
You can read a storybook. You can turn from page to page. There is no end to the story called love. So
take a lesson from the teacher.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Whispers, 1966 on Dory. Take a lesson from the teacher. Yeah, fine stuff. And, of course, rest in peace, Walter Scott. Yeah, gives me a chance to play all sorts of Whisper records. And yesterday I played Needle in a Haystack, but I played the version that was on Soul Clock from 1969. I want to find the 1967 Dory version because the quality of it is inferior. But the other than the quality of the recording, the song itself much better on Dory, I think. I'll let you decide for yourself. But 888-876-5593. Naoto is in Japan. What's happening tonight, Naoto?
Yeah, I was listening to last night's show.
Yeah.
And Sherry was talking about me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. And both konnichiwa and oyasuminasai.
Yeah.
In Japanese? Yeah. Both are pretty accurate, and I really appreciate that. And it was really interesting to hear her story about Japanese friends.
Yes, roommates in college, yeah.
Yeah, roommates. So I want to say thank you for leaving such a positive comment on me.
Oh, of course. We love hearing from
you. Yeah. Oh, really appreciate that. And I will keep calling.
I hope so. I'm going to count on it, Naoto.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really like this show, and I didn't expect it. This show become such important place to communicate.
Yeah.
For me, so
good.
I really
good. All right,
appreciate everything.
So I get to use my word, arigato. There you go.
Yeah. Arigato.
All right, good deal.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Okay, bye. All right. So
yeah, bye.
Yes. Okay. Pronunciation, not my strong suit, but you get the idea. All right. Yeah, I know. I'm such an American. All right. So 888-876-5593. I say that because in most other countries, people are multilingual to some extent or other, particularly in places like Europe where the countries are small and the boundaries, you're close to another country. Not unusual to speak 3-4 languages, but most of us don't. And that's changing with immigration and all that is changing. But originally, the whole thing was the emphasis was be an American. And when my adopted family got me, they were not. And they were hell-bent that I was only going to speak English. And, I regret that, actually. I know it was common at the time, but it would have done me a world of good if I spoke more. But clearly, I don't. All right, so 888-876-5593. We'll muddle along in English with James on the South Side. What's happening tonight, James?
Oh, I'm hanging in here. How are you?
Well, I'm here and glad about it. So what's going on?
Okay, I did have one song request.
Okay, let's add to your stash here. All right.
Okay, I'm going to request, I'm going to Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing.
Oh, my God. All right.
Although I could put 300 Pounds of Heavenly Joy by Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows. That would be better.
Oh, God. Oh, I remember it, too. Oh, God. So Marvin Gaye, I was expecting something like, I'll be doggone. You get Sexual Healing. Oh, well. All right.
Yeah, but I did have some tests on my hearing, but that we won't go into that. But I had a couple stories. I'll let you go and check them. Okay, apparently Del Monte is bankruptcy.
Really? Well, the first question.
Yeah.
Well, the first question to look at is who owns it now.
Yeah, and I couldn't get the story to come up completely, and I said, now I saw two stories about this.
Okay. Now, by the way, I'll answer the question that I just asked. It's now owned out of Walnut Creek, California, by NutraAsia, and you can bet that this is a conglomerate. And that there's a vulture capital in this somewhere. In 2014, about 11 years ago, Del Monte was acquired by a Philippine company and for like $1.5 billion or something. And that was the fruit division. Then the pet foods were not in the deal, and that went somewhere else. And then Smucker acquired the pet brands. And so, okay, they're going through Chapter 11, this Del Monte, now a subsidiary of NutriAsia. Now let's talk about what else they own. Del Monte, S&W, Contadina, College Inn, Kitchen Basics, Joyba, and Take Root. So Greg Longstreet is the current CEO, and several products are in the number one or two position in the market. So you say to yourself, well, they're number one, two position, people buying all this stuff, what are they in bankrupt? Well, how do you think they buy these things? They buy these things on debt. So
leverage.
So are we really really shocked? And the history of it goes back to California. But interestingly, a lot of people don't know this. It doesn't go back to just fruits and vegetables. It goes back to a hotel on the Monterey Peninsula. In fact, Pebble Beach, the infamous golf course, is on that land now. And it grew out of that. And Oakland Foods in the 1880s used the name Del Monte. They were marketing coffee for the hotel. So that's what it was originally. Then they expanded their business and decided, well, we'll just keep the name Del Monte. And in addition to coffee, we'll have canned peaches. And I don't know exactly why, but that was the two, peaches and coffee. And they merged with another company in California and all that. And so then they merged again in like the early 1900s with the Alaska Packers. I don't remember what they, but anyway, they got Sunkist in a deal and all that. And they got a bunch of canneries, and they got the pineapples in 1917. And that was obviously Hawaii, but which wasn't a state at that time, of course. And they got canneries in the Midwest and in the Philippines. And then after World War II, they started to buy construction, and build in some cases, both buy and build construction facilities overseas for, canning things. And so that was the deal. And California Packing, which had been the overage name, went by the wayside, and it became Del Monte Corporation. So the RJR bought them in 1979. If you remember RJ Reynolds, RJR Nabisco.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then KKR. You'll know this name, Kohlberg Kravitz Roberts. Hello, Vulture Capital. And then they sold the fresh fruit to somebody, and RJR Nabisco kept Canada and Venezuela. Maybe not the best move, but anyway. So the remaining processing divisions were sold to a venture capitalist that was associated with Citicorp and Merrill Lynch. And Kikkoman, don't forget that. They acquired Del Monte in Asia. So you see where we're going this, by the way. I haven't even got to the fact that Hawaiian Punch was sold to Procter & Gamble. All right, and and then the pudding division went to Kraft, all right, and then Del Monte Mexico went to another Vulture Capital, Hicks Muse, Tate and First. Texas Pacific bought Del Monte in '97, and then they bought Contadina from Nestle, and then they reacquired Venezuela from Nabisco again. I don't know why you want it, but okay. And in 1999, the big announcement: they were publicly traded. And in 2002, they bought a bunch of stuff from Heinz. And, and you're wondering why they're going broke? I'm not done. You can see the deal. They established...
Looks like they bought as if money grew on trees.
Well, this is the way Vulture Capital works. So anyway, when they bought a lot of Heinz stuff, or maybe Heinz bought a lot of their stuff, but I think it was an all-stock transition that Heinz shareholders got the better of it. But anyway, when they bought Heinz, that put them in Pittsburgh. So they moved their headquarters to Pittsburgh. It's a really nice building, actually. So then, while they're at it, they get Sunfresh. You're saying, what the hell is Sunfresh? It's premium citrus and tropical fruits. And then they get S&W, all right, and everything from vegetables to tomato sauce. And so, meanwhile, Del Monte's former plant number one, the thing in San Francisco, that's a lot of real estate. They should have sold it, but it became Del Monte Square, and I don't think they did sell it. So in 2006, it became the second largest pet food company, divesting its U.S. infant food business and its U.S. retail private label soup and gravy business and acquiring the two pet brands. Now, by the way, this private label stuff is big. When you go into the store, like maybe it's a Kroger's or a Safeway or whatever, and you see their house brand, well, believe me, Kroger's is not making it in the back room. There are people like S&W that are making it for their label. So then they wound up selling the soup and the infant formulas to Treehouse, but they bought Meow Mix. And then they bought Milk-Bone from Kraft. I know. Do you really want to eat vegetables that comes from a company that's making Milk-Bone? Well, anyhow, they sold their seafood.
Think you're barking up the wrong tree,
right,
man.
They sold their seafood division. You're saying they had a seafood division? Yes, it was Starkist. They sold their seafood division in 2008 to Dongguan Enterprises, that's South Korea, And they, by the way, Dong Quang paid $363 million. I guess there's not as much money in StarKist as some other things. Del Monte said StarKist was no longer a good fit for the company. I guess Charlie had to go. Then in 2011, KKR bought it all with an investor group, more venture capital, and along with Pedia Bear's Wholesome Foods, Vestar Capital, and Centerview Partners. And so for all that, the New York Stock Exchange delisted them on March 11th or March 9th, I think, of 2011. But anyway, then the Philippines in 2014, they bought Del Monte Pacific Limited, and they bought the rest of the consumer food business, and that was the $1.61 billion. So at that point, the remaining company was the pet food division, which they named Big Heart Pet Brands. Then 10 years ago, they acquired Sager Creek. Well, yeah, I'm not going to remember too many more because more recent times I don't remember. But anyhow, they filed for Chapter 11. Why? Well, hell, it's all venture capital. They have to restructure with the lenders. So that's what's happening here.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm like thinking, I'm certain that it took a whole team of accountants, maybe a whole accounting house.
Yeah. It was, that's the way it always is. That's what all these people are. They're number crunchers. And, you know, ConAgra bought Del Monte Canada. And, the problem is that when you keep seeing things like when Kraft sells Del Monte, they don't sell, they said in 2006, we're selling Del Monte and other underperforming assets. Who are they selling it to? A vulture capitalist, Sun Capital Partners. Sure they're going into 11, but it doesn't mean anything. It's just, once again, we're rearranging the deck chairs. That's all it is.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, I have one that's maybe a little more encouraging. I love the story. Okay, a lady who was, I think 65 or 70, she was in Southern California, got tired of living in her, place in California, paying all the taxes. So she bought herself a 12 or 15-year lease on a ship, Odyssey, to go around the world.
Yeah.
And I think her name was Lane, I think, something like that. And she said, sure, I a good chunk of my retirement. Yeah. No, I think it was $129,000.
Yeah.
But she said, 15 years, hey, I don't have to worry clothes washing basically I got a nice little place on a ship that's been elegantly refurbished.
Yeah, this by the way is not that unusual. In fact, there are people who do this on ships that haven't necessarily been dedicated to residential. They actually move on to cruise ships, and it's yay and nay. Some people like it, some people hate it. But the woman you're talking about, because Via V Odyssey is a residential cruise ship, and it just goes around the globe. And so you basically buy a condo on it. And so she gets to spend 15 years in her stateroom. Have you ever been in a stateroom? I don't know about you, but 15 years?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, right. So, yeah, the first perpetual world cruise. About 10, 15 years ago, there was a cruise ship that was selling really elaborate condos, you know, like 2,000 square feet. And I remember this because Pat Boone bought one. And I have no idea, because sadly his wife died after that. I have no idea what happened after that. But you'll see this routinely where, you know, a couple sells their business and sets sail for the 15-year cruise. And that's the deal on this Via V Odyssey, is that it's not forever. Well, obviously, but it's also not that cheap. What it winds up costing you all-inclusive, which all-inclusive, by the way, it's a pretty good deal, about $3,500 a month.
Yeah.
A month. And so that includes food and drinks and cleaning. And so I think in the next 3 years, they're stopping at 425 ports in 147 countries.
But if you want have a bucket list, you want to sign up, I guess.
Well, you know, I guess there's a couple things. Before you decide you're going to do this, take a cruise and find out whether you get seasick. because some people, it's just not the lifestyle for them. So, but in the case of many of these couples who were interviewed, they were already in their retirement and they were already living at least semi-lavishly. Like one of the couples who got on the Odyssey had been living in Hawaii, and they say, well, it's cheaper than where we've been for the last 10 years. And so there it is. Now, of course, when it's a residential ship, this isn't going to be kept up the same way if it's like Princess or Holland America. Now, the next question is, how well are they going to keep up this ship? I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah. I mean, I got to admit, it's, okay, if you want to do this, I mean, okay, I mean, and you've got a list.
There's another thing. When you're saying retirement, you usually mean that you're a little older. Now, keep in mind, you may have health problems. And keep in mind, this is going to be a bloody fortune if you do.
Yes.
All right. There you have it. Good deal. Always good to hear from you. Thank you, James.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, 888-876-5593. But yeah, the Odyssey has been doing advertisements showing people who are all happy. But yeah, if you have any type of chronic medical condition, you might want to think twice. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Quality on that, absolutely. Well, the technical word for it is it sucks. All right. And 2 years later, they knew that they had to redo it. But I wish they had redone it exactly the same way. But they didn't. And this was the Soul Clock version that we played last night. And it is just not as good.
You're searching in vain. You know you're searching in vain. Just one sweet girl. Is it faithfulness? Possible? It's so hard to find. Like peace of mind, it's like trying to find. Needle in a haystack. Somebody show me mercy. Yeah. Needle in a haystack.
The needle in a haystack is supposed to be sung slowly. All right, well, I digress, but the quality of it's better, but the first one was a better presentation, though. Man, there's a recording engineer who should be tarred and feathered. All right, well, after the news, we'll talk about something else that doesn't matter with Sherry in Naperville and Mary in London, Ontario, and Room for You, too, coming up on WGN Radio.
Of me and try to love me, pretty little baby. I'm hoping that you do. You can ask the flowers. I sit for hours telling all the bluebirds, the bill and coobirds, pretty little baby. I'm so in love with you. Young puppy love must have its day. Don't you know it's much more fun to love while the heart is young and gay? Meet me at the car hop or at the pop shop. Meet me in the moonlight or in the daylight, pretty little baby, I'm so in love with you.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is a mystery. All right, it's obviously Connie Francis. It's 1962, Pretty Little Baby. And I always loved that song. In fact, it's on KJ. I thought it was a cute little record. It was an album cut in America, and it was off that 1962 album, Connie Francis Sings, on MGM. It was a single, mostly a flip side, in countries all over the world, but never a hit. Now, here's the deal. Apparently, someone found it, like in the last year, and made it an internet hit. And now it's just, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And Connie Francis was interviewed about it, and she said she had to hear it again to even remember the song, which, by the way, I found really interesting because they made this poor woman sing it in multiple languages. So I would have thought she would have remembered it just for that, but apparently they made her sing a lot of things in multiple languages. But anyway, I bring that up because John said, did you know Connie Francis is in the hospital? And someone called to tell him that, and sure enough, yes, she is. She's 87 years old. She's living in South Florida, and as exactly what she's doing in the hospital is unknown. She was originally in ICU and then moved to a regular room. All that's known is she was hospitalized due to extreme pain. Now, why this came out is Cousin Brucey is still alive and doing radio shows and doing concerts, I guess. Well, anyway, he's going to do some type of Independence Day thing, and it involved Connie Francis and a number of other artists, and she had to tell him that I'm going to have to bow out because I'm in the hospital. So it now became known. She had a previous hip injury, and that landed her in a wheelchair, and I don't know whether that was permanent or not, but what I do know is that they took her to the hospital this morning, and they, you know, a bunch of checks and all that, and they moved her from ICU and took her to a regular room, but nothing else known at this point. So hopefully all will be well. You know, on the one hand, what a Cinderella career. On the other hand, what a hard life all the way around. Yeah, had a father who was just so controlling, and there went the big romance of her life, Bobby Darin. And, you know, then her brother, who she adored, her younger brother, George, was murdered by the mob. And on it goes. And then, of course, her rape in Long Island at that Howard Johnson's motel. I mean, it was thing after thing after thing. So she seemed to be on pretty even footing in Broward County. And, you know, now she's in the hospital. Hopefully it's just temporary. So, you know, hopefully she's resting and not resting in peace. All right. hopefully she's resting. And, of course, she's thrilled that everybody remembers Pretty Little Baby. But I wish somebody would do some research on this and figure out who brought this back to life. I mean, I don't think it was a KJAA listener. I really don't. But so who else was playing this? I have no idea. All right. So Sherry is in Naperville. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, hold on. I'll take off speaker.
Yes, that's usually what we go through with you. All right, you're off speaker now. What's up?
Well, that's all I can hear when I'm running around the condo.
Yeah.
All right. So I just wanted to let you know, first off, this is not why I really called, but I had to go to the little girl's room, and then I heard Naoto on the phone.
Yeah.
And then I heard... did he say arigato to pronounce something correctly? Like,
well, I said that, but apparently I didn't pronounce it correctly, but he did.
And what is it?
Don't ask me. You know, you got the wrong person for this. He'll have to say all it right. again. Or you can look it up online. I'm sure they have people who have 27 files of how to say thank you.
No, we all learned how to say it during the Mr. Roboto.
I missed all that, but I'm sure it's all online.
And my Japanese roommate would always just say, like a shortcut, domo domo.
Okay.
But but when James called and mentioned Del Monte, that miffed me all day long. Because they said it also includes the brand Contadina.
Yeah, well, right. I went through the whole litany. These are venture capitalists.
Yes.
Yeah, so
but
of course.
My favorite. This is what bugs me. That's my favorite diced tomato brand.
It's not going to go away. Believe me, this is about rearranging the venture capital deck chairs. It's not going away. And the other thing is that Contadina is a big seller. So in the event they decided they were liquidating more, there's probably people standing in line who take Contadina. So don't worry about it.
Well, they said they were filing bankruptcy because they had an overstock of goods and they had a certain amount of overstock.
Well, come on. Like I say, it's a vulture capital conglomerate. They're filing bankruptcy.
And they're putting the company up for sale.
Well, some of it. Yes, of course. That's what I mean. When you have that level of debt, you see, don't talk about their overstock. Take a look at the balance sheet and see how much debt is involved. Because remember, like you say, they have Contadina. Well, they had to buy Contadina. So their debt comes with this. It's usually not just a stock for stock swap. So, it'll work out. Trust me.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Your Contadina will not disappear.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother, my grandparents that grew up in the Depression, or not grew up, but were married in the Depression. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I go to my grandpa's house when it was, you know, when we were like 7, 8, 9, 10, in the refrigerator door, there are always pickled pig's feet. As well as frog legs in a jar. And also, when I go shopping with my grandmother, neither of my grandmothers drove because it wasn't acceptable then, I guess. But she lived closer. Joel, we just had to kind of walk 2 blocks across the street, 2 more blocks. But I remember in the deli section, they had like containers of... Oh, what was it called? Calf's brains. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what do you do with that? You know, but that like scared me when I saw brains as a kid. But at any rate, but when they were, you know, during the Depression and stuff, they had ration stamps and stuff, which I've learned a lot about from the OTR shows.
None of that has anything to do with this.
No. But this does. My Velveeta was a big, Kraft was a big advertiser in Velveeta cheese. And she would make with Cremex, because my grandpa lost all his teeth and, or had them pulled out because they were all bad. Mm-hmm. He said, just take them all out when the doctor said. Or
but you digress. Said. Move on.
Okay. But, well, it's a great story.
Oh, I see.
And at any rate, he, you know, oh, what was I? So she would make with Cremex and Velveeta cheese, and she would add tomato chunks to it, and that's the best macaroni and cheese I've ever had with the tomato flavor. Mm. So I will make like Kraft macaroni and cheese or whatever macaroni and cheese and add a half a can of tomatoes or a third of a can, and it's just so much flavorful. But anyway... Okay, that was the end of that.
Right. And again, it's not about whether Contadina sold or didn't sell. When you're looking at anywhere between $1 and $10 billion in liabilities, you know that you've got secured debt of over $1.2 billion. Believe me, this is about rearranging the vulture capital deck chairs.
I hope so, because they did say that they had too much stock on hand because they didn't count on
COVID
post-pandemic.
Right, exactly. And that is a minor factor, no doubt about that. And along with declining private label business, like I said before, when you're Del Monte, a lot of what you make isn't under any name you know. It's under the house brands like Kroger or Safeway or Albertsons. They do private label. And private label sales have been declining for a lot of reasons. But the biggest thing is when you have...
I thought they were increasing because of the inflation.
Believe me, it's decreasing in terms of the percentage of business. But when you have that level of debt load, you cannot manage the costs. And so you get liquidity issues, and obviously when inflation is a factor and when, rising interest rates can be a factor, you got a problem because you don't have the level of wiggle room that you would have if you weren't under that level of debt.
Well, Okay.
So that's what now they want to sell all or substantially all of their assets, and I guarantee you there's people who will want to buy it. But the key is going to be whether or not they can eliminate a good portion of this debt, because see, nobody's willing to buy something and pay more for it than it's worth. And if the debt
I also heard they got some kind of loan or something.
No, it's debtor in
possession. $914 million.
That's debtor in possession. That's debtor in possession financing. That's another subject. But that financing will allow them to operate while during the proceedings. But yeah, that's debtor in possession. That's different. But anyway, we'll see. Because again, if they've got, and I don't know, I haven't looked at their balance sheet, so I don't know. But if the debt is so high that it would be hard to sell because no one will take on that level of debt, well, that's going to get interesting. And, you know, that's...
I don't know. Supposedly that whatever loan or whatever you're calling it, is going to help them smoothly go through bankruptcy.
No, it allows them to stay alive while they're going through it. Not smoothly anything. They'll stay alive while they're doing this.
I got the news from WGN, so who knows?
Well, yeah, they knew. But what happens is, you see, when you file for bankruptcy, you lose access to capital. But what you do is you get DIP, which is debtor in possession financing, that allows you to access a line of capital, in this case, $912.5 million, to operate while it restructures its business or debts. Otherwise, it can't get any money. So,
do you know what chapter? Because it's like,
yes, it's 11. It's 11. It's reorg.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Because I didn't hear that all day, which would have been interesting.
Well, every newscast I heard said it was 11.
Oh, well, you know, I guess I'm listening to the wrong news station.
Yeah.
Even on WBBM, which I listen to in the morning for their business news, because it's twice an hour. And more.
Well, anyway, so I wouldn't be worried about Conadina. Let's see how it goes, and let's see where this debt really is and how they can, in fact, market this to somebody else. Because, you know, when debt is overwhelming, it can be very hard to find anyone to take that on, to say the least. Now, as far as debt, you know, you don't go to the bank and say, I'll borrow $2 billion. It's many levels of debt. So a lot of this is...
I have another question.
Okay.
Yeah. So when the foreign country buys a U.S. company, we have the bankruptcy court system for big companies and whoever else, but is it because their countries don't have bankruptcy protection?
It's not coming into play on that at all. If they're buying
I just wondered if they bought it because they knew if they got into trouble and they didn't know what to do.
You don't buy it with that in mind, period. No. They're buying it because they you know, if they can get the assets at a good price. For one thing, the United States is a wonderful market to operate in because we spend so much darn money. It's before when we were talking with Jim about the coins in these games that people play. That new game, when it was out 3 months, it made $50 million in coins. Right. And most of it was from the U.S. players. So, of course, people want to buy U.S. businesses. But in terms of how it will operate, that in part depends on whether it remains a U.S. business. And so there's a number of factors. It's not black and white as far as that. But again, just a notion is there's many, many levels of debt. And in some cases, you can convince the debtors to become equity holders. And that can help to a degree. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
All right. And also one last thing.
Yes.
When James was mentioning the Odyssey named ship.
Yeah.
I know, like horse racing, you can't name your horse if it's somebody else's got its name. Are boats the same way?
Well, yes and no. It's not a question of horses or boats or anything else. It has to do with whether somebody is, in fact, holding a mark on it. You know, so if a cruise line is trademarked or service marked in ways other people can't do that, no. But when you look at this particular case, this ship has been so many things in its history that it's interesting. And maybe we'll go over
that
later.
The only reason I ask is because... when I was an intern for Leo Burnett, in my junior or senior year, both of the years, they wanted me back. You're only supposed to get 1 year, and they asked me back, but to train the new ones. And at any rate, there was one time when we were supposed to go on this little boat, and I'm always late. I'm always late because of my back problems.
All right, but anyway, get on with it. Yes.
At any rate, so I was on the, I don't remember what harbor it was in Chicago.
Doesn't matter.
And I know they left. And then this other big boat, people were working on it. And
all right, what's the point?
Oh, that this other ship's name was Odyssey.
Okay.
And they let me on the boat. I said, oh, I missed my workmates, and I'm going to wait for them to come back. And one guy was like,
all right, what are you trying to ask me? Don't go on a tangent.
I'm not trying to ask you.
Okay.
I'm trying to tell a story.
All right, well.
And anyway, so I got, I mean, I was always considered myself an adventurous. I went there. I know you got a break.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I know. And they let me on the boat, and they were very nice.
That's nice.
And they gave me a postcard, and it was, you could charter it and this, that, and the other. But anyway, it was a wonderful experience, and
we're done.
It was just very nice.
All right.
People don't do that anymore.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, got to go.
Okay, take care.
Oh, help me. Help, help, help. In terms of her first, which was a question originally about trademarking names, it's a gray area. Do not think it's yes or no. All right, and if you ever want to know, call me and we'll go into it. But no, it is, it's very gray, and it has limited, the marks are limited. All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. We talked about it last night. I forgot who wanted to hear it. But Kenny Ball, Midnight in Moscow, I said I'd play it, and I did, 1962 on Cap. It is a great backing track. You know, if you're reading a disclaimer or the license renewal or whatever, yeah, it's a wonderful thing to use. But other than that, it was Kenny Ball's lone hit, though he was quite the jazz man in the UK. All right, so apologies to whoever wanted it. I forgot you, but I didn't forget to play it. So after the news, we'll come back hopefully with you right here on WGN Radio.
You're sitting there yakking right in my face. I guess I'm gonna have to put you in your place. You know, if silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. You quoting figures and dropping names. You're telling stories about the dames. You're over laughing when things ain't funny. You're trying to sound like the big money. You know if talk was criminal, you'd lead a life of crime. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
WGN Radio. Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Moe's Allison. Gail wanted to hear some Moe's Allison. Yeah, Your Man Is on Vacation. Album of the same name, 1976, on Atlantic. And happy to do that. We'll play another one from that album next. Yeah, Your Molecular Schedule. Your Molecular Structure. That was it. All right, so 888-876-5593. Brian is in Seneca. What's happening tonight, Brian?
Greetings from the very far southwest suburbs of Chicago to the even further southwest suburbs of Chicago, and say that three times fast.
All right.
Okay, just one comment on the vulture capitalists taking down Del Monte Foods, among many other things.
Yeah.
There's a name for that amongst us more common salt of the earth folks.
Uh-oh.
Embezzlement.
Oh, God. No, it's not embezzlement. Oh, that's funny.
Not according to the letter of the law, but according to the letter of the fact,
oh,
it is.
God.
They do debt packing and asset stripping to these companies to make all their money. The debt packing is obvious.
Yeah.
Now, if I was just sitting here and bought your radio station and your trademarks on a mortgage and stuffed it into the company, of course, finding somebody stupid enough to write that mortgage would be the big trick.
Well, you see, but you don't do it that way. Like I said, you have many, many levels of debt. And of course, remember, especially when interest rates are low on secure investments, people who are needing a greater return are looking for more and more return, and they're going to take on more and more risk. So eventually you get into the junk bond category of subordinated debentures. And people see, oh my God, I'll get 13% back. Yeah, but you probably lose it all if it goes into bankruptcy. So there's no shortage of people willing to do these deals. They're very complex.
Yeah, and there's too many people who forget that even in the days when there was such a thing as a free lunch, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, there's so many things involved, and I don't want to get political, and we would, but, you know, we can, and it doesn't matter whether it's R's or D's, so it's not political that way, but, you know, between changing a lot of the definitions and the laws and, of course, the leveraged buyout and so forth, we got where we are, and here we are.
Yeah, well, the leveraged buyout oven by itself is not inherently wrong.
Well, yeah, that's right, right, but it winds up that way.
That's how the Davidsons got Harley Davidson.
No, I believe me, I understand it.
And they saved the company.
Yeah, I understand it start to finish, but as I say, that's for another show, not this one. All right.
Oh, certainly, and that's why I mentioned a more fun subject of regional rivalries, both here and abroad. I'll cover the one that came to mind abroad at first when I was listening to Naoko and his call.
Okay.
If you're aware, the Kansai Prefecture, which is close to the ancient capital of Kyoto, but doesn't quite touch there, at least not according to the Kyoto people, but centers around Osaka and slightly to the southeast of there.
Uh-huh.
The equivalent accent of somebody speaking the Osaka variant of Japanese is kind of like a southern drawl in American English. In other words, it's not esteemed to be incredibly bright.
Oh, okay.
Kyoto themselves, since they were the ancient capital of Japan up until the Meiji Restoration, and Tokyo was previously Edo, which was the functional but not actual capital because that's where the shogun and the actual decisions were made, but the emperor lived in Kyoto. Well, Kyoto, they have a very indirect yet biting way of speaking. For example, if you should get involved with in a conversation with a native of Kyoto and you forget their interest, you talk for maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes on something that interests you and they could sincerely give less than two hoots about.
Right.
They will suddenly compliment you on the quality and the beauty of your watch.
Yeah, that's good.
This is not to say that they give two hoots about your watch. It is their subtle way of telling you that you've just stolen 20 minutes of their lives that they will never get back.
Precisely.
Please shut up and leave.
Yeah. Works for me.
Yeah, back to the United States, there's many rivalries. Of course, the North and the South have various rivalries for all sorts of reasons. I was contemplating this a night or two ago when doing some shopping at Walmart. And the incredibly painful way that they have things set up, if you should want to, say, have your purchase rung up by a human being and pay in folding money. instead of sticking a credit card into a machine. And that had me remembering what a person told me years ago about the Arkansas Dilemma.
Okay.
And the Arkansas Dilemma is this. A husband and wife travel from rural Arkansas, go to the capital of Little Rock, or at least the major city, if not the capital, and they request a divorce, and the divorce is granted. Are they still full-blooded siblings?
Right, yeah. And by the way, the capital of Arkansas is Little Rock.
Okay.
Yeah, so as far as that goes. But regardless. But yeah, you know, I don't know if they're rivalries, but everybody.
Well, we have a rivalry with Wisconsin, and it's.
Well,
teams of Green Bay are only on the surface. We have a wonderful dairy industry, although Wisconsin is more proud of theirs. California has its own dairy industry, and the reason there is not a more serious a rivalry between California and Wisconsin than might actually exist is because we've only gotten really good at shipping dairy goods really fast from California and Wisconsin and vice versa in the last, not even a century.
Well, when you're talking about Wisconsin, of course, we're going behind the cheddar curtain, and there's many implications of that.
Oh, certainly. But California would tell you that Wisconsin dairymen are mere pikers.
Oh, I understand this. And Oregon would put up billboards saying, don't Californicate Oregon. So on and on it goes.
Yes. And, of course, there is the great state of Delaware, which many people, in their minds at least, spell D-E-L-A-W-H-E-R-E.
Well, now, remember, it is sales tax free. So there is a reason that Delaware exists, so everybody in Philadelphia can shop.
That's true. And the final thoughts on that also go into a request. I would like you to play John Denver's rendition of Saturday Night in Toledo, Ohio, which is also called Why You Don't Diss a Folk Singer When He's Just Starting to Become Popular.
Okay. All right. You get it. I'll do it.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. So 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh, there's a lot going on in that call. I'll tell you what. All right, so with that in mind, we move directly over to Paul, and Paul is in Iroquois County. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Paul.
Hey, I just don't know how you do what you do. You must have the patience of Job.
Oh, there are times, yeah. I understand.
I used to have people tell me all the time when I was younger, you need to get into the radio business. You have a good voice.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, if you know somebody, let them know, because that's the only way I'm going to get in there. So anyway, I was one of the first male telephone operators when I got out of the service, and
now wait, let me interrupt you and say, originally all telephone operators were male.
That's true, way back.
Yes.
Yes. But then it went all women.
Yes.
And then in the, I think, 70s, we moved people into non-traditional jobs so women could be
frame dames and switch bitches and all that.
That's right. Yeah. So they said, if you want to do that, you have to work in a non-traditional job for a while. So I said, okay, I'll work in directory assistance. And directory assistance, way back when a human being actually talked to a customer, you had to get rid of them in so many seconds. And having a good voice, it was very difficult to get rid of them.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, that's really funny. I love that. Yeah.
It was not funny to my group manager because they were constantly monitoring me and telling me, you've got to hurry up, you've got to hurry up. And I said, I just can't cut people off when they're going Paul, you have a wonderful voice. Did you ever think of this? And I'm going, looking at the clock going, they're going to get me on this. They did. But anyway, my idea of being a radio personality was listening to Franklin McCormick.
Remember him. Absolutely.
I mean, he wasn't a fast talker. He was a slow talker, and I'm a slow talker, so I could never do AM stuff.
Right.
So anyway, to my call, you are talking about Crane Radio a lot.
Yeah.
And it sounds enticing, but in my listening to AM radio, it's not what it used to be years ago where it was music.
Of course not.
I was born in 1950, so you know the type of music I listened to on AM radio.
Yeah.
And now it's all political or sports. It's either Trump is the Antichrist or he's the second coming of Jesus.
Right.
Yeah. And I get tired of hearing that. So my question is, where do you see AM radio going in the future?
Okay, I can answer this pretty succinctly. And by the way, the next bumper I got to play for you when you told me about being a directory assistance operator, so you'll like the next bumper. But anyway, here's the deal, and I've said this many times. When we have this discussion, we're discussing the delivery truck. When you buy something from Amazon or Sears or Walmart or whatever, and it comes, you don't go outside and say, my, look at that truck. You look at what's on it. You look at what's inside the package. Well, for radio, programming is inside the package. If a radio station, either AM or FM or satellite or online exclusive, is doing something that you want to hear, you're going to hear it. Now, of course, you're not going to hear a signal that isn't in over your head or you don't have an internet connection or whatever. But assuming you have access to it, the programming is going to drive it. And if tomorrow you had programming on AM that appealed to you, you'd listen to it. So I don't look at it like the band is destined to die. It's what's on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the key. And I always use the real-world example. You know, Top 40 radio died an unceremonious death in 1979, and everybody thought, well, this is gone forever. Well, in 1982, music had changed again. You were starting to hear techno-pop and things like that, the Eurythmics and all those people. And
right.
A guy in Houston went Top 40 on the old KULF and made it KKBQAM, and he was number one in teens within 30 days. I mean, teens. Who normally would never. And Houston is very much an FM radio market. It's flat. It's fine for that. I've been doing it for a decade with no problem. And so, you know, these are teens. They found it. Now, of course, the guy was smart. He realized that being on AM playing this, he was subject to someone going on FM and doing the same thing. So he wound up doing it, eating his young. But the point is that initially, when it was only available on AM, those kids found it. So I don't damn the entire band. I think AM's problems, other than a dearth of programming, the technical problems, we'll see what we do. For one thing, of course, the overload of RF everywhere certainly impacts the band's ability. But more than the RF problems is most AM station owners don't keep up their ground systems and all that, so their signals are diminished by their own hand. But other than signal issue, it really will come down to programming. And so we'll see.
So where do you think that programming will go in the future?
You know, I have no idea. I'll tell you.
Looking into your crystal ball.
My crystal ball works by looking at the past and extrapolating it. And when I do that, what I realize is that the only time you see real creativity. And, you know, you talk about people like the barons of Top 40, the men who did this, you know, the Storzes and the McClendons. You forget the fact that the stations were worthless. People will only take a chance when there's nothing left to lose. And so that makes this time pretty ripe for something innovative, because on a lot of AM stations, they're not worth much. The problem is, sadly, most of the time they're owned by a company that owns a number of them, and they're so debt-strapped that that's a very sorry story, and they can't expend. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I'm looking forward to, and I don't know how they'll solve this. You know, we talk about AI now. The reality is it's not AI in the true sense. It's just elaborate deductive reasoning. You're not getting inductive reasoning yet. But when you do, that may help, because right now, no one goes to Google and searches for something they've never heard of. So that's the real deal with the internet. You can be on there and be doing something everybody would want to hear, but if they don't know you're there, you're in a world of hurt. And so that's why very often the streams that do well have some type of a terrestrial component, so people know they're there. So there's a lot of things that are going to change, but ultimately it's when somebody takes a chance because they got nothing left to lose. That's what'll make the difference.
So with the enticing crane radios that you're talking about, it sounds good, but pulling in more talk shows, it's really not worth it.
Well, it depends. It depends how much you listen to radio now. But if you're, you know, it's not going to be magical. It's not going to suddenly bring back life to AM or FM. It is going to be what it is. It'll just pick it up better. But for instance, if you're sitting in the phase zone for WGN and you're having trouble with the signal, I mean, a C-crane radio may be a help. There are times when you just say, like in an emergency situation, I don't think you can beat an emergency radio, something that'll work no matter what. You know, the batteries are dead, you didn't put it in the sunlight, you got no electricity. Hey, well, with some of them, you just hand crank it for 30 seconds, it plays for 30 minutes and has a light. Well, that may be something you want in your arsenal. So there's a lot of reasons you'd want radio. Sadly, it used to be that radio's preeminent place was morning drive, where everybody woke up to it. But of course, these days, people wake up to television and they wake up to their phones and on and on and on. So, it just depends. If you're saying, will the Sea Crane radio suddenly make radio in the middle of the night more entertaining? Don't I wish? No, but you'll just be able to pick up whatever it is better.
Okay. Anyway, kudos to you, Raleigh. If I were you, I would just be saying, we're done.
Oh, believe me. Yeah, well, I can't wait for you to hear the bumper. As an operator, you will relate. You'll have to let me know what you think.
Nice talking to you.
All right, thanks.
Again,
appreciate it. All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Oh, man, I talked up this bumper and it's not playing? Oh, this is terrible. Well, I've got to find another copy of it then, because it's a fine bumper that that Brian needs to hear. Oh, maybe I'll just pull the 45. All right, here.
I'm new in town, ain't been around too long. Honey, can I buy you a drink? You're sorry, but you're married and it's wrong. You're not sure what your husband's gonna think. What's a guy to do when he's all alone? Sit and stir his coffee by himself. And you can't find love in the yellow pages. Just try looking, no such things for sale. You can't find love in the yellow pages. And this old town, it's as cold as hell. I'll use this dime, guess I'll make a phone call. Operator, how you been? Please don't hang up, just one moment, that's all. Would you mind just talking for a spin? I'm so lonely and you sound so sweet. Would you be busy tonight? Hello? You can't find love in
Yeah, I don't think Michael Baldwin had any idea that they were timing them. All right, that record was written by Kenny Nolan. And, of course, the first time you release a record, you have right of first refusal. And he thought he was giving it to Charlie Rich. That's a little, oh, is he mad. But anyhow, I wind up being Michael Baldwin, and You Can't Find Love in the Yellow Pages. And I thought that was a great little record, and it immediately came to mind when Brian was saying that the callers wanted to hear his dulcet tones just a few moments longer. Yeah, all right. So rest in peace, Michael Baldwin. Although I think Kenny Nolan is still with us and probably still mad about that. So we've got another hour to talk about whatever is on your mind, and I'm looking forward to it right here on WGN Radio.
They got a song for winners. They got a song for those who lose. They got a song for dealers, yes. They got a song for those who use. They got a song for beggars. They got a song for those who choose. But baby, they don't have a song for a sucker like you, sucker like you. What's that you're saying? That you have been misunderstood. You wanna take the time and clear it up. A matter of fact, I wish you would. And if it's a real long story, take your time. You can't make it good, make it true. Cause baby, they don't have a song for a sucker like you, sucker like you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Ben Sidran. Always loved that song. 1977, it was on Arista. And the deal is, I thought of it because we were playing Mose Allison for Gail earlier, and there was an album about 20 years ago now that was Georgie Fame and Ben Sidran and Van Morrison as a tribute to Mose Allison. I thought, I got to play some Ben Sidran and maybe some Georgie Fame and maybe another Mose Allison. It all could happen coming up on WGN Radio. All right, so we're going to get to Laura and Willowbrook, but we got Nick in Baltimore, who we had on hold for an hour last night. I feel terrible. So, Nick, the floor is yours. Talk as long as you want.
Hey, good. How you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in, but, you know, had a little bit of a rough day medically, but I'm okay now.
Oh, man.
It's just one of those things. But I had a couple of things I wanted to throw out there, and I promise I won't hog the time here.
Oh, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
My clock. I'm looking at the... Okay. When I was at WNAV and I had to stayed there because I did a weekend shift. I had two jobs, so I would go from one job to the other. So I would, you know, sleep and do the morning show, and then I had to leave there and go up to Baltimore to work there.
Uh-huh.
So I had my shortwave. I had an ICF Sony ICF 2002,
uh-huh.
And I had a battery pack. Now I was in one of the abandoned non-used studios, and I had the radio, and I have the radio on like I do all the time,
sure.
Go to sleep. And I noticed that the thing lit up like a Christmas tree.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, and now you would know this because you know engineering, is that because I was under where the antenna is and the...
The RF, it might have been the RF. You know, the RF's really funny. I know I had friends who years ago loved the quarter of a million watt stations because they'd take, they'd take those fluorescent lights and they'd go out there and they'd light up, you know, play with like they were lightsabers or something.
Mm.
So, or like when WLW was half a million watts, the farmers in Mason, Ohio were just fit to be tied because the barn lights never went off and the cows didn't sleep. sleep. So, so yeah, enough RF can do almost anything.
I remember you told the story about you put Biz or something.
Oh, that was the water. You were talking about water water cooled transmitters. Yeah, WAPE in Green Cove Springs. It was those pellets you got in the boxes like Tide. And yeah, I put a pellet in, and it was great. But because that was outside back then, and you can get there and do that. And Mason had a water for WLW. They kept their big transmitter for years. That whole Blaunox, half a million watt deal, and it had a moat. And I always dreamed of having my own moat, but not going to happen at this late stage.
No, well, but that was a funny story. The other thing I wanted to ask you was the rules for when a station, particularly FM stations, if there's a move in. Now, for example, here, the 104.3 allocation, when it was WITH, when they moved their, they screwed up their signal, basically.
Yeah.
They messed up their FM. They had a really great signal, and then they messed it up. They either lost the lease on the transmitter side.
I'll tell you, this happens so often. And sometimes it is the fault of engineers. Like near you in the D.C. metro, the old WEZR in Manassas,
right.
Their engineers, their construction engineers, put the damn antenna on backwards. And so for a year, they didn't understand why they didn't have a signal. So that happens. But the other thing is, and I'll say this to my dying day, and I'm, the engineering world is safe from me. I know enough to almost be dangerous and no more. And the deal is, though, because of that, I don't accept things that people who really know their stuff do accept. In other words, there are things that work on paper, beautifully on paper, that I know in my heart of heart will never work in reality. And the biggest case in point was in L.A. years ago when Cute, which had been at Flint Peak, decided they were moving to Mount Wilson. And to do that, to get in there, they had to drop to well below 1,000 watts. And, but this was okay because it was 5,800 feet, and on paper this looked great. I said, it's not going to work. And all these engineers, you just don't know what you're talking about. I said, that's true. I don't know what I'm talking about, but it's not going to work. Well, of course, it didn't work. It did not cover because I just knew that they needed a little more oomph and power than they were given it, regardless of how the formula worked on paper. And Arizona is funny, the Phoenix area, because a lot of people who can't get onto South Mountain because there's just no room for them anywhere, they try these quasi move-ins. And one of the most attractive places to them is the Pinal Mountains. Well, I'm sorry to say the Pinal Mountains will never cover Phoenix. You can go ahead on paper and show it, but you're going to have a Swiss cheese pattern. You'll be great in Wickenburg, but forget about it in close in Glendale or whatever.
Where you want to go.
Yeah, right. And so, but I can't tell you how many people have lost, their whole livelihood thinking that it would. So, sure.
What they did at ITH, and then when it became, when Scripps took it over, I talked to an engineer over there, and what happened was they went back to they put the FM where ITH AM was, because they lost lost the other transmitters. They put up a new antenna way the heck out Perry Hall somewhere.
Right.
It was like 20. By the time the signal got back in, it was weak. But they never increased power to 20. They never increased to 50,000 watts, which supposed to.
Their big problem wouldn't have been that. And you're talking about ERP 50, not necessarily a real 50.
Right.
But here is the deal. With FM, height is your god. Now, not with the former Cute exception of under 1,000 watts, but normally when they moved out there, what height above average terrain were they?
It was 465.
That's not very high.
It was closer to 500.
Yeah, that's still not very. I mean, I realize that in flat areas you're going to be probably on a joint antenna or whatever, but you want to get 1,000 feet if you can get it.
Yeah, but they... But the guy told me, because I always thought it was extra that was the problem. He said no. He knew they knew those guys over there, and what they did at Extra is they optimized their signal towards DC and away from.
Oh, yeah, right, right. That's what we were talking about the other night. DC and Baltimore have a lot of directional FM.
So they didn't. What happened? What later on, of course, they moved it to TV Hill, and it's got a great signal now. But you said
TV Hill. We're at a lot more than 500 feet.
Yeah, they're running 13,000 watts directional, slightly.
At what height?
At 900.
Yeah, see, they're ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. We'll flip over all the cards.
860, I think. 860-something feet.
But, right. But that makes so much difference. And the real wonderful thing about height is, other than constructing the antenna or paying the rent on it, height doesn't cost you monthly money. Wattage does. So that's why, like, AM stations that are 50,000 watts, they're having to pay for 50,000 watts a month, an FM station may be able to be running 2,300 watts and still ERP 50.
Right.
So, that's what's beautiful. And, part of it has to do, obviously, with, your antenna line and a number of other things. But in general, height is your best. Yeah, all right. Height is your, absolutely. Height is your best friend.
Right. And, but sometimes when these stations, they don't upgrade in time, there's a move-in and they, you have to protect it.
And things have changed, back
TOP had that problem.
Yeah. Back in the day, the wild days of Docket 8090 in the 80s, and how they calculated whether you could do a move-in or not is very different than where we are now. We're now dealing with mileage for co-channel and first edition channel and second and third and the intermediate frequency. And so depending on if you're a C or a C1 or a B or B1 or an A, you've got just set in stone mileage differences.
So is that why? So yeah, that clears that up, because then really they're only concerned with their primary coverage then.
Right, let's say you've got a full C and you've got a co-channel problem. That's going to be 124 kilometers if it's a first adjacent. If it's 101.9, then 102.1 and 101.7 are your first channel adjacency, and that's going to be 108 miles. Your second channel adjacency is 99 miles. Your third channel is 98 miles. Now we're already talking about seven frequencies, and then you got an intermediate frequency channel. So you're concerned with eight different numbers that are set in stone. And then, by the way, then you've got issues with, are you 320 mile kilometers from Mexico or from Canada? Now you got a different deal.
Yeah.
So
I remember back in the day, Raleigh, when I used to go to Pittsburgh and I would go on the bus, I could, you could listen to these stations all the way up, but you can't do that now.
Oh, I know.
Because, translators everywhere and...
Oh, it's just insane. And also, a lot of the physical plants really aren't what they should be.
Yeah, that really is true, yeah. I mean, a station that had a really solid signal in years past, now all of a sudden they have coverage problems.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you can go in there start to finish and probably find exactly why. And it's a combination of things, obviously, but more than anything, it's inattention and a lack of willing to spend to keep your physical plan up. That's one thing. When people see what I've got in the middle of nowhere, they're stunned, because it's like, it's all Nautel. It's all top of the line. Everything, it's ERI antennas and on and on and on. Very few people do that.
Now, but you know enough where you can actually build a transmitter.
Well, I don't want to. And by the way, anymore with things being solid state, solid state, hell, a digital. I mean, there wasn't even solid state when I first learned. We were still doing tubes, I was having...
Well, that's what I worked with when I worked...
And they're easier, yeah.
We had tubes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, everybody had to learn, I remember in junior high learning to draw that mercury vapor rectifier tube and all that and go from there. And, but it's a different world now. And most of it is so plug and play that when they're selling you a transmitter, they're not expecting you to fix anything. They're telling you, oh, it's easy. Just dirty this module. We'll send you another module. You know, you're not going to touch it, is what they mean. So
it's a throwaway.
Yeah.
Throwaway.
Yeah.
Society.
It really is. And so yeah. But no, I care, and most people don't.
Yeah, and of course the money gets involved in it too.
Oh, tell me about it. Well, you know, what enables me to do that is not the revenue from the radio stations. Forget about that. It's that I got the cell tower, you know.
Yeah.
And,
oh.
You know, the likes of the Verizon and T-Mobile and everybody else, you know, well, they need me. Well, I don't come cheap.
So you're like 90 miles from Phoenix, right? I mean,
as the crow flies, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're at a higher elevation too, but the interesting thing about Globe Miami is, and this was one of the reasons why we picked a frequency many years ago when Bill Taylor was signing them on, you cannot hear Phoenix radio in Globe. You can't. And see, I considered that to be a big advantage, where Payson, the city to the north, which is also in the county, much nicer city, but Phoenix radio pours into there. You know, so I thought, oh man, you know, when you have major market radio that is accessible to you, you're just SOL, you know. But we do not have that, and so you know, we kind of own the little area, and it's all local. You know, we do 10 newscasts
nice.
A day, and they're 100% local. You know what's going on at the VFW. You have no idea what's going on in Washington D.C.
Yeah, that's an advantage what you have.
Yeah, I think it is. Absolutely.
Because, and you guys do a great, because I've listened, you guys do a great job, really. And I really mean that.
I would like to do more, but I don't have time. And of course, you know, doing the WGN show is near and dear to my heart and all that. So
yep.
I used to go to all the town meetings and do reports on them and all. You know, I can't do that now. They're happening while I'm on the air.
Well, you're on a great, GN is a great station.
Oh, man. Isn't it, though? Man, oh, man.
And the signal comes, it pours in here. It's one of the best signals that we get out of Chicago.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I've said this many times. When I was at WROK in Rockford, and it's the best move I ever made in my life because it really taught me how to do talk radio without callers. But I remember the first day, and thank God I was not doing nights. So I was doing afternoon drive. But the first day that I was coming out of there at night, and here I am, 1440 a.m., you probably know what's coming, and I'm looking at the towers. I mean, I can reach out and touch them, and I turn on the radio, and underneath them, First Harmonic 720 WGN, you know, like, oh, my God. Yeah, so I could actually hear them while I was looking at the ROK towers.
Well, how about this? I could see our towers at WNAV, couldn't hear the station.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
So it was, you know, almost there.
Yeah.
Because it was super directional at night, and you know, shooting. They're shooting it like southeast or towards Delaware.
I think,
where they did it at night.
Yeah.
But
well, you're about as over radioed as it gets. You in D.C. D.C. especially. Oh my God. And of course, it's not just medium wave and FM. It's all the government radio and everything like that. There's enough RF there that it's a wonder people aren't dropping over.
Well, they did what they could to you know, even it up. But there's a lot of signals here. It's too bad there's nothing on them I want to hear.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's what we were saying when Brian had called earlier. Exactly. You know, but
yeah.
I guess if we live long enough, the more they're worthless, the more something interesting might pop up.
I honestly, God, before I go, all my listening is online.
Yeah.
I have to say it.
Well, you know, that's most people, but I read an interesting statistic last week that was very very encouraging because, you know, obviously there's a lot more online listening than there is terrestrial, but of the online listening, I was very surprised, the majority is to terrestrial radio.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, even though somebody might not be listening to, WGN on 720, they're listening to it at WGNradio.com.
Yeah, well, I do. I have a preset on my...
So there you go. On your Wi-Fi radio. Yeah, sure.
Yep. Well, I have several of those.
Oh, yes. So do I. Yeah.
And you've got pretty well, because they're all on different systems.
Well, that's right. And then of course, as far as just standard radios, you have to have numerous ones, and a few of them have to, you know, be able to pick up the HD channels, even though nothing at all is on them. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I don't want to blow your break.
Well,
again.
No. Well, yeah, I know, and you're keeping up with that, and I greatly appreciate it since I never do. But I'm so grateful that you called back because I felt so bad last night. You were on hold for an hour. Do it again soon.
It's great to hear the other callers too.
Okay. Thanks.
Hey,
appreciate it, Nick. Okay. Bye.
Okay.
All bye-bye. Right. And we'll get to Laura, who's a real trooper on this too. Next, coming up on WGN Radio.
Shake your money maker, 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 and then shake your money maker, shake your money maker. Shake your money maker, shake your money maker, shake your money maker, and then I got a gal lived out on the hill. I got a gal lived out on the hill. That she's gonna love me, but I don't believe she will. Shake your money maker, shake your money maker, baby. You gotta shake your money maker, shake your money maker. You gotta shake your money maker.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and well, it was Don and Beloit who said, "You gotta play me some Elmore James." And I decided to play "Shake Your Money Maker," 1961 on Fire. Now, Fire was Bobby Robinson's Harlem label, but that song was actually recorded at J&M in New Orleans, Cosmo Matassa's wonderful studio. So, yes, there you have it, 1961 on Fire. All right, so 888-876-5593. And Laura is in Willowbrook, so how's the play going?
Oh, my gosh, the rehearsals are going wonderful. Excuse me. But before I tell you that, I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a situation where your people are telling you how things are supposed to run, then all of a sudden you get involved and you're like, okay, now I'm running things? You ever had this situation?
Well, I don't know that anybody ever told me how things were supposed to run, or if they did, I probably didn't listen. But yes, I've had the displeasure of having to run them, which isn't always the easy part.
Okay, because having done over 50 shows and always being on the stage, and they're always telling me what to do.
Right, now you're telling them what to do.
The table. Yes, and it's so weird because I'm like finding myself, I'm like, now try this, and if let me know if you like it, please. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to be doing that. I'm supposed to be telling them, this is how we want it done, and then I can always change it another time. But I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so different. But the cast is wonderful.
It'll become natural, and I'm sure the cast appreciates you giving them that option, yes. But ultimately, it is your call, because you're the one who will hang for it.
Yes, yes. And the one person, I've got a nickname now, she calls me, well, you're the boss. I'm like, yes, I am. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. Absolutely. That's your role.
It's just so weird. And I found out that I've been dealing with the writer of the play and asking him questions. And the producer of this whole production of all the shows, she's like, well, are you getting input from him? I'm like, well, a few things. And she's like, well, it's your show. It's like, you should just do what you feel. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, I'm even asking his opinion. I'm like, I got to stop this and just take more charge and stop asking opinions.
Well, you know, it's absolutely perfectly fine to ask opinions. You don't have to act on them. you know, as far as getting information, sure, get all the information you can, then make your own decision.
That's true. Oh my goodness. And then we're doing a rehearsal and the producer runs the whole production of 8 shows. She's like, well, we're not going to have, first she had said, well, we're not having programs. I'm like, I've never gone to a concert or a play that you didn't have a program to tell you what's going on.
Interesting.
And then, so I says, okay, well, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to put together something and we'll get it together.
Sure.
Because it's a cost thing, you know, they don't want to spend the money.
Right.
So I go to rehearsals yesterday and I says, well, we're thinking of doing this way for the program. She says, what do you mean you're thinking of doing this way for the program? She's like, well, we already are setting up a program. I says, what do you mean? I says, when we first set this up, you said there wasn't going to be a program. Like, make up their mind. So she's like, oh, no, we can't do whatever you're doing. We have to go with what we're doing. Like, okay. So they're basically going to list the play, list the writer, list the director, and the cast. And that's it. Usually I'm used to, like, what scenes are going to be done.
Right, exactly.
Biographies and all
that.
Yeah. So, like, oh, geez. And then she's watching rehearsal. She says, well, you know, you can't be dragging this chairs across the stage. She says, that's going to mess up the stage. Like, okay. So I'm like, I don't know, like, I'm semi-confused. Like, okay, what am I supposed to get for permission for, and what can I just go ahead and do?
Well, you can go ahead. You can go ahead and do anything because it's easier to apologize after the fact than try to get permission before it.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So, you know, and this is all volunteer. They're not paying you, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So let's not sweat it. You know, I mean, as far as that goes,
okay.
Do whatever
okay.
you
okay.
want. You know, I mean, if they tick you off enough, you just say, "I'm out of here." You know.
Yes.
So don't take it seriously. Have a good time, and for God's sakes, don't worry about it.
I guess so. And one other thing, I know you can probably compare this to music, but the playwriter specifically wrote on his script. Scripts cannot be changed unless okayed by me. Now, I'm thinking, well, that's the words that are said, but I'm thinking, okay.
It's not set direction. It can't be. But
okay.
it is dialogue.
Okay, because the one lady, she wanted to bring on a prop. He's like, oh, no, well, that wouldn't be in there. So, like, okay, I don't really have to listen to that, do I? I only have to listen to the words he says, right?
Yeah. Now, if the prop is a live tiger, that's a different story. What's the prop?
Well, okay, well, you'll know this. Okay, a lady walks on stage. She is the stage manager, and she decided on her own, and I thought it was a good idea. She decided on her own to bring on a toolbox. Like, okay, stage manager needs to bring tools and
all
stuff
right.
to fix stuff.
I don't think that's
I thought that was a pretty good idea. He says, well, no, she's a ghost, which we don't know yet until later in the play.
Oh.
She's a ghost, and if she walks on, this toolbox would be, like, floating by itself. I'm like, who the heck is going to know that? So I'd like...
Well, they might after the fact. You know, if you're setting her up to be a ghost.
Yes.
Now, but you know, I don't know that. I don't know if there's ghostly toolboxes.
Yes, me either.
You know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my confusion now is just what can I do, and what is he going to yell at me and say? Well, that's a change. Am I allowed to change anything but the words? Or can
you know,
he come on with the toolbox and is that...
I guess anybody above you can say anything they damn well want, but I wouldn't
sure.
overthink it. I'd just do whatever you wanted
sure.
to do.
Sure.
And if they call you on it and say you can't do it, all right, well, fine. But just assume it's all okay. But
Yeah,
the big thing is do not lose any sleep over any of this. This is supposed to be fun.
Well, it has, but yeah, I haven't lost too much sleep yet.
Good. We
but
don't.
But it's going to get easier
that.
Because they says, just it's your thing. The producer says, she says, don't even ask the opinion of the writer, really, because that really just would get too much involved.
Well, now, like, okay. Is the writer someone who is physically there, or is the writer someone who's never going to see this?
Well, he's physically not there now, but he is coming from Ohio to Illinois to see it.
Really?
Because there's a cash prize available.
Oh, all right, all right. So this isn't like you're doing an Edward Albee play, and obviously Albee
right.
wouldn't be there. All right,
right.
so
right.
if you
right.
would, that'd be more interesting by the minute. But
got that right.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, if the guy's coming, I guess you need to be a little mindful of that, knowing that he's going to see his creation, his baby. You're interpreting his baby. So
yes.
So you probably want to be just you know, just for his sake, as true to it as you can be.
That's true. Well, I always appreciate your input. You always have great insight, and that's very helpful. I'll do much better now after this call.
No, well, you'll do fine.
I'm getting calmer.
But the big thing,
I'm getting calmer.
Yeah, the big thing is do not stress. Again, there's no money in this for you. This is only to have a good time, and the minute it's not a good time, do something else.
Okay, well, thank you. That helped, Raleigh.
All right, good deal. Keep me posted.
All right, take care.
Okay, well, goodbye. All right, so yeah, you know, I mean, hell, why would you stress over that? All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888, Raleigh. And we're going to talk to Red in Chicago. I'm not 100% sure what about. John is typing it as I speak, so I'll do this first, and then we'll get to him. And one more bumper. I promise I play that other Mose Allison from Your Mind is on Vacation, that album, and that would be Your Molecular Structure coming up on WGN Radio.
Molecular structure is really something fine. A first-rate example of functional design. Those cosmic undulations are steady coming through. Your molecular structure, baby. Your cellular organization is really something choice. Electromagnetism about to make me lose my voice. Got all my circuits open, my system's reading gold. Your cellular organization, baby, stop the show.
Raleigh James, and that is also Mose Allison. Yeah, Gail wanted Mose. He played something earlier. Now we played Your Molecular Structure. So hopefully she liked that. 888-876-5593. Red is in Chicago. Hello, Red. Welcome to WGN.
Oh.
So what's up? Yes, here I am.
Okay. I got a little bit of information about radio, which is kind of unusual because not American radio, but they, have you ever heard of a radio station that they called Aspidistra?
Is that the Hungry 540 AM?
No.
Okay.
This is a British thing during World War II.
Okay, all right.
And they developed, they got an enormously powerful station that was supposed to be in America. RCA built it. And it was supposed to be for, I think, WJZ, I think it is, WJZ in New Jersey or someplace. But it was so strong, they couldn't use it because the government passed a law. I mean, is a $50,000 limit, right?
Well, no, actually, you need to go back a little further before you get to that story, before World War II, because we did have a radio station in America, WLW, which had 500,000 watts prior to the war. And that was about as powerful. But if we're talking medium wave, right, about AM, there is a station in Hungary with 2 million watts right now at 540.
Oh, Boy, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, 2 million. So yeah, and I'll tell you, a little closer to home, 450,000 Radio Bonaire at 800 in the Lesser Antilles. They're running 450,000 watts. So, yeah,
can that be heard?
Yes. Well, it depends where you are. Now, there was one sweet spot in Florida, how I loved this, because, you see, you've got three stations on 800 that are audible depending on where you are. One is X-Rock in Mexico, which is El Paso, basically. One is CKLW in Windsor, which is really Detroit. And the other is Radio Bon Air in the Lesser Antilles. And there's very few sweet spots, but there's some where you can get all three, but you really have to play with that radio a lot. But yeah, if you're just sitting in Miami, you're probably going to get Radio Bon Air. You know, if you're sitting in Cincinnati, well, you're probably going to get CKLW. You know, it depends where you are. And as far as FM, the most powerful FM in America is in Grand Rapids. They got 320 kilowatts.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, let me go on with the story. Yeah. This transmitter was specially built, and it was apparently 500,000 watts. The one source I read said it said 600,000.
Right.
And anyway, it wasn't used. The Chinese, around 1940, this was. The Chinese government wanted to buy it, but the British beat them to the punch, and they got it for quite a lot of money. It cost quite a lot. They took it to England, and the Canadian engineers, army engineers, built this special bunker to house it. They dug out a gravel pit and they put this concrete thing, and it's still there. It's kind of a tourist attraction. You can see it. And they built the station and went on the air first time in November 8th, 1942, which was the... and you can get this stuff on Wikipedia if you look up Aspidistra.
I'm sure
Radio.
It probably will tell you where they got the name.
It's a house plant in Japan.
It came from a comic book figure, a comic book song, The Biggest Aspidistra in the World.
Right. Yeah. That was a takeoff on that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's a plant. It just grows indoors.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, they called it. They had some kind of reason
but
for calling it that.
As you know, they weren't doing this November 8th, 1942 to entertain anybody. This was used to disrupt night fighter operations. So
partially, yeah.
Yeah.
It also was used by the Navy,
right?
The British Navy, and also their political warfare executive.
Right. The propaganda. Right. Exactly. Sefton Delmer was his name. Why do I know that?
Right. Yes. An amazing man with an amazing career. Really amazing.
Yeah.
And they had Soldaten Sender Calais was the name of one of their stations, a propaganda station.
Oh, yeah.
That was used against the Germans. The Germans hated it so much, it was so irritating eventually, that a German soldier, any German listening to it, if they were found out, could get in big trouble. Just big trouble for listening to it.
Yeah, and it's funny because you know, in 1931 they were interviewing Adolf Hitler, so a lot changed.
Oh yeah, he knew Hitler personally.
Yeah.
He had a really strange life, this guy had. And
and Germany had a more powerful transmitter. They had Goliath.
Oh, how strong was that?
And that, by the way, that was VLF as far as that goes. They were after submarines and a million watts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
They were on VLF, and VLF is like 3 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz. It's, you know, and what it does, of course, is it penetrates seawater, which is why they were interested.
Yeah. Yeah, and the U.S. government had stuff.
Yeah,
like
right,
this
exactly.
Too.
But Goliath was the big dog in this, and it was worldwide because they had submarines submerged in the Caribbean. The only thing that they couldn't penetrate was fjords, like in Norway.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Fun stuff. Yeah. So why were you interested in this?
Oh well, I'm. A World War II buff,
so
I know all kinds of crud about World War II, a lot of junk.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
There's a lot of junk. And I was reading a book called, I have it in my hand right here, A Genius for Deception, How Cunning Helped the British Win Two World Wars.
Yes.
And much of the book is about Sefton Delmer.
Yes.
And so anyway, they were, there's a thing called black propaganda.
Oh, absolutely. By the way, that book, I have thumbed through that book. That Rankin wrote that, and that's why I know some of this stuff, but I think it's still available. That's a good book. Now, here's the problem. I've got less than 30 seconds of time. I want you to call me back tomorrow night, and we can talk about black propaganda.
Well, okay, I'll try to.
Yeah,
I'll try.
If you got something better to do, do it. But if you're doing absolutely nothing, call me back.
Okay, it was great propaganda too.
Yes.
So
all right,
I'll call.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you. All right, so that pretty much is done it. This went quickly. Tomorrow night, 21 hours from now, we have 3 big hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I hope we hear from Red. And if not, I really hope we hear from you as well. So we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. That's what makes the show a pleasure to do it. I look forward to doing it again tomorrow night. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.